Hi again. Good to see you. It's been a long time. James, we're in the letter of James, which is a fascinating letter. I know you're probably weird to hear someone say, no, you should really like this. I hope as you've been reading, or if this is you haven't been around the last few weeks, as you will hopefully start to read this letter of James. It's a fascinating letter. And James has something I think really important for us to say. For us to take away today that is going to kind of require us to go a little bit maybe deeper than we would, or to kind of get our arms around some bigger things. But I think if we do, I think there's something really important there for us. James chapter 2, we're going to be starting in verse 14 this morning. And really this series and where James is going to head specifically today is, what does it mean to when we talk about religion or talk about being a religious person? A series, it's called Pure Religion, and James is going to unpack this in our passage today. I wonder if you've thought of that, of what it means to be religious. I wonder if you've thought about what it means to be a religious person. For me, there was a life-changing moment where I first said yes to Jesus. I was 13 years old. I was at a summer camp, and at the end of this summer camp with a bunch of other middle school, high school students, there was a moment where someone presented the story of Jesus and said, Jesus has died for you, and if you say yes to him, you can start a new life. And for me, that was a life-changing moment, but it also opened up other doors and other questions for me, particularly that kind of stepped into later. In life of what does it mean now to live that out? What does it mean to be a religious person, so to speak? Maybe you have those questions. Maybe you think about a religious person as someone confined to a certain context. Maybe they wear a certain outfit or they operate and work in a certain place. Remember when I lived in Europe, we were being a Protestant in Europe was an interesting experience. You were definitely kind of the minority. And when I first moved to Europe in ministry, I was a worship leader at the time. And I remember walking down the street to an event one time with my guitar. And I went to a boulangerie, to a bakery that I often went to. And this time, though, I had my guitar with me. And the guy said to me behind the counter, he said, what are you doing? And I explained I worked for a church and I was going over there, and he just kind of gave me this strange look, because in his mind, a religious person, a spiritual person, that it's the Catholic cathedral down the street for him. And they certainly don't look anything like me, and they're certainly not carrying a guitar. Maybe for you, a religious person is someone that's confined to a certain space. Maybe they have a certain job title, a certain thing going on in their life. Maybe a religious person is someone who had this incredible act of sacrifice in their life. Maybe for you, you think of a religious person as someone who's moved to some foreign country, some long, faraway place in the world. They've sold everything. They're willing to kind of live on almost nothing in order to help a certain group of people in need. And you kind of look at that and go, that's amazing. We want to get behind that. We want to support that. We want to give to that. But I could never do that. And you kind of, you know, for you, a religious person, if that's your idea of a religious person, it's kind of this, there's this huge gap of what you do every day and what they're doing. Maybe a religious person is someone who's made this incredible act of sacrifice. Or maybe a religious person is someone who has this incredible depth of knowledge. Like you could like say a verse in the Bible and they would like quote it in three languages or something like that. Maybe they're the type of person that you could ask them any question, they always have this incredible, well thought through answer. And you hear that and you see that and you go, I couldn't do that. There's no way I could ever kind of learn what they learn. And so there's a gap between you and what it means to be religious. Or maybe a religious person for you, when you think about that, you start to kind of get the hives a little bit. Because maybe a religious person for you has been someone who's hurt you or disappointed you. Or maybe it's not even someone you know, but someone you looked at from a distance or followed or read or listened to, and they acted and did such a way that completely turned your opinion of them. So even thinking about or talking about religion or a religious person just turns you off. Whatever it is, James has something different for us today. Today we're going to see in our passage that James is going to reset our understanding of what it means to be religious. And for James, a religious person is this, and we'll say it a couple times this morning, that a religious person is one who sees who God is, and that drives how they act in the world. That for a religious person, who God is drives how they act in the world. So it's not confined to a certain context that religious people only work over there or stay over there or live over there. They're not people who can only make this incredible sacrifice that you can never make or aren't called to make. They're not someone who's just smarter than everyone else, and they're certainly not smarter, and certainly not someone who is certainly not undone by examples of people who have failed to be the very thing that they taught and lived. For James, a religious person is someone for who they see who God is, and that drives how they act, how they live in the world. So I want to take us through this passage this morning, and we're going to see this. We're going to see how James sees that faith, that who God is and our belief in who God is drives how we act in the world. That's what it means to be religious. And I hope through this, my hope for this, is that you would start to maybe evaluate your life in a new way, that maybe today would be a turning point. Today you would maybe evaluate your past. Maybe there are things that you need to release, to let go of. There are things you've been holding on to. Maybe there are things in your present that you are being called into, that you are being burdened by, that you maybe need to take a step of courage today. That maybe there are things in your future, there are things on the horizon that you need to see through a new lens. My hope today is that you, through our time together, that you would evaluate those things and see a new standard, set a new standard of a religious person, what it means in the world. So we're going to be in James chapter 2, as I said, starting in verse 14. This, by the way, is one of the most challenging passages in the entire New Testament. But I believe in you. We're going to get this together. You've already had coffee this morning. No, I think it's really good, and God has some good stuff for us today together. This is James chapter 2, beginning in verse 14. James is going to start with what I would call the problem of faith. The problem of faith. Beginning in verses 14, this is 14 through 17. James, writing this letter to a collection of Jesus followers in his day, says, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead." So James says his issue. He teaches his issue. He puts it right out front there. His issue is people who claim to have faith but don't do anything. They don't actually act on the very thing that they believe. That's his problem. He says, he imagines a situation. He says, imagine there's someone in need and you say a really spiritual thing to them. You give them your favorite Bible verse. You say, really, I hope you find something to eat. James is saying, that's crazy. Like, why would you not just step in and help them right there? Like, that's what it means in James's mind to be a person of faith, to be a religious person, is that you would do the very thing that you believe. He says, what good is it? Actually, he says that twice, both in verse 14 and in verse 16. What good is that? It's not any good, is the answer to that question. And the problem for James, he says in verse 17, the problem is faith by itself. That for James, and this is where we're going to see today, for James, what you believe and what you do, you can't separate those things. For James, those two things are yoked together. They're linked together. They're joined together. That faith and work together. Now, he's not talking about you could take works and what you do instead of faith or in place of or as two options you get to choose. He says these two things, these two ideas, what you believe and what you do are linked. They're yoked. They work together. This is what James is calling his community to. So James understands that faith and works work together, that you can't separate what you believe and what you do. Now, that may even start to stir some questions, and James anticipated that this could stir some questions. So James went ahead in the next set of verses, and he states the opposing view. In fact, this was a common practice in James's day. If you wanted to state your opinion, you stated your opinion, and then you anticipated how someone might have an opposite view, so you stated their view and gave your argument against their view. And that's what James does here in the next set of verses, verses 18 through 20. He says, but someone may say, or someone will say, hang on, James, I don't really agree with that. You have faith, I have deeds, like as if these are two things. So this person says, hey, these are separate things. And James says, show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. He says, you believe that there's one God. Well, good. Even the demons believe that, and they shudder. And then there's this hinge verse between this section and the next one. He says, you foolish person, don't you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? James says, I can imagine someone coming along and having a different opinion. And for James, he kind of contrasts these two opinions. That his view, James's view, is that faith and works are yoked together. They work together. But he says, I imagine someone could come along and say, no, James, that's not true at all. Faith, what I believe, and what I do are two separate things. Hang on, James, what happened to me at 13, that was good, that was a thing. I'm no longer 13, I'm older now, I'm much older now, and what I do now, James, that's my own business. And James says, hang on. You can't separate those two things. Those two things have to go together. They're linked, they work together. And he gives this example of an entity that does separate these two things. He says, picture the demons. He says, the demons believe something. They believe something about God. He says, they believe that God is one. Now, this idea of the oneness of God was actually one of these central tenets to the Jewish belief system, still is. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, it says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. This was something that was prayed twice a day. And so when James is writing in his audience, when he says that you believe in one God, they would all go, okay, we get that. That's like the thing to believe in. And James says the demons believe that. Fascinating. In fact, the demons in the Gospels even, the stories of Jesus, some of the demons, they even believe who Jesus is. They believe Jesus before a lot of other people believed about Jesus. And James says the demons are perfectly orthodox in their belief. They understand who God is, but their actions are separate. They're working against God. He says you can't separate these. That's what they do. That's an example of belief divorced from action. And James says that's not how this works. These two things are linked. They're yoked together. And he kind of restates his main idea there in verse 20. He says, faith without deeds, as if you try to separate these, thank you very much, what I did at 13 was one thing, it doesn't matter how I live now. He says, if you try to separate that, it's useless in verse 20. The original language there in useless means workless, like it just doesn't work. James is calling his audience to something more. And I know we're going to get into even deeper ground in a second, but you just need to hear that today. What James is calling them to is something more, that somehow what they believe about God and what God has done in Jesus should start to change their world, and it starts to change their world through them. James is calling them into something. He's calling them into something new in their world that God is going to do through them when these two things are brought together. So James has given us the problem of faith. He's given us an opposing view. And then what he does next is he gives two examples of his viewpoints. He gives two examples of people in Jewish history whose faith, who what they believed and what they did were linked together. The first example is Abraham. The second example is a woman named Rahab. Let me read this and then we'll talk about it for a minute. Verse 21, he says, was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together. And his faith was made complete by what he did. And so the scripture was fulfilled that said, Abraham believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness and he was called God's friend. Skip verse 24 for a second and we'll come back to it. Second example, in the same way, was not even Rahab the prostitute considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies, sent them off in a different direction? As a body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. So James gives two examples of people who've lived with faith and action linked together and yoked together. The first example he gives is Abraham. And this is kind of like, if you were in James's circle, this would be like kind of calling out the top example of exemplary character and behavior. This would be like when you tell someone, oh, that person over there, they have the character of Mother Teresa. It's kind of like our moral, like, high watermark. That's what James is doing here with Abraham. When he calls that, when he uses the example of Abraham, he's setting the standard. He's like, you know the top person. This is the one that, like, believed God the most and acted. This is the patriarch of our faith. You know Abraham's done that. They would all go, yes, so we know about Abraham. So he calls out this supreme example of Abraham, and then he alludes to probably the greatest act of faith in Abraham's story, in the Jewish scriptures. There's this moment where God says to Abraham, Abraham, through you, I'm going to create a nation, and the world is going to be changed through you and through your son Isaac. And then later God comes along and says, Abraham, that kid Isaac, I want you to sacrifice him. And so there's this moment of decision of whether or not Abraham will believe a God, that God will still provide, even if he takes away, seemingly takes away, the means of his provision of his promise. He, of course, doesn't go through it. God kind of saves him from going through fully with that act, but there's this moment of faith for Abraham. And so what James is doing is calling the greatest person of character and doing the greatest act. And he says, you see that? You see this person of extreme, exemplary character and extreme action? That's what faith looks like. It's not just that Abraham sat around and had some mental reorientation. No, no, no. It's about that he actually went and did something with it. That when God called him to act, he actually responded and acted. He says, James in essence says that, it's faith, that his faith and actions, it says, were working together. The Greek word for that is the word from which we get the English word synergy, that his faith and works were in synergy together. They were connected together, that together they were moving forward more than maybe they could do alone, that they labored together for a greater work. And he says that his faith was made complete, which I just love and find that so fascinating, that the whole point of Abraham's faith was not for him just to sit in a tent. The whole point of Abraham's faith, the end, the fulfillment of his faith, was that he would act when God called him to act. That is the fulfillment of faith. That's what he means by faith made complete, is that it reached its intended end. The intention of faith for Abraham was that he would act when God called him to act. So James gives this incredible example of Abraham over here. And then the second example he gives is a woman named Rahab. If you're not familiar with Rahab's story, Rahab was a prostitute in the ancient town of Jericho. And when the Jewish people are coming into this land, God's calling them to take over this town, and there's this woman, Rahab, and she has fascinated Jewish theologians through the years, because Rahab believes God, we're told in Joshua chapter 2, but there's no reason that she should. She's an outsider. She's a Gentile, a non-Jewish person. So she's an outsider to the story and the promise of God. Not only that, is she an outsider by nationality, but she's also an outsider by her lifestyle. That her prostitute lifestyle was not something that God would call people to live. And so you have this woman who's everything on the outside, and yet we're told in Joshua chapter 2 that something changes in her, and she believes that God is the world's true God. And so she acts on that belief that when spies come into land to check out the city, she hides them so people don't find them and then sends them safely away. And so James does this fascinating thing where he takes this incredible, supreme example of Abraham and he contrasts it with Rahab, or not even contrasts, brings it together with Rahab, this scandalous example of faith. Where you have Abraham, this father of the faith, you have Rahab, this outsider of faith. It's almost like James wants to say, it doesn't matter where you look in the history of people who have lived with faith. It doesn't matter if you look all the way on one side. It doesn't matter if you go all the way to this side. Everywhere in between, people of faith have lived and acted out their faith when God calls them to act. There's a force to what James is bringing here with his Abraham and Rahab examples. That for James, faith is not something, not just a mental reorientation, But faith starts to change your world through you, that you start to act in ways that God is calling you to act. That who God is, who you've understood God to be, drives how you act in the world. James' entire argument, I think, is summed up in this verse, in verse 24 that we skipped over. In verse 24, it says this, "You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone." For James, these two things are working together. Faith and works, actions, working together. Now, this is a verse, I said earlier, this is probably one of the hardest passages in the New Testament because of this verse. In fact, people for hundreds of years have had problems with this verse and this passage from James. The reformer Martin Luther famously was very much didn't like the letter of James. In fact, when he translated his Bible, he stuck James way at the back. He's like, if we're going to have it, we're going to have it at the end because I can't really deal with it. It's because of statements like this. And so statements like this, for a lot of people who have studied the scriptures, they see a contradiction between what James is saying here and what Paul has said in his letter to the Roman church. And so what I want to do is just take a couple minutes, and I kind of want to unpack where it seems like they're in contradiction and show why I actually think they're complementary. And so if this is interesting to you, I'm glad you'll have a good time, and if it's not, just smile and pretend you are, and then we'll continue on this morning. But I want to take a minute and unpack this a bit. Now, here's where the seeming contradiction comes. It comes James chapter 2, verse 24, and Paul's passage in Romans chapter 3, verse 28. And I put them up there on the screen, and I kind of space them out for purpose, and you'll see in a second. Paul says in Romans chapter 3, verse 28, you can read it later, he says, "A person is justified or considered righteous by faith and not by works of the law." Pretty straightforward. James, in our passage here, says a person is justified, which is the same word for considered righteous, by works and not by faith alone. You can see why it's like, do you know what you're doing here? You know, obviously that's a contradiction. Something's going on here. And I wanted to share this because maybe you've thought about this. Maybe if you've read through the scriptures like this, maybe when you have your community group this week, someone's going to go, "But yeah, did you read Romans chapter 3? And the whole group's going to get like silent and they're going to go, "Well, maybe we should end in prayer." You're not going to really sure what to do with it. So maybe just take a few minutes together. I kind of want to pack it a little bit for me of how actually I think these are a little bit more than a little bit complementary. Okay, two things I want you to know about these passages and how these two things actually complement each other and actually help us understand James's idea even better. First thing is that they're talking about different topics. So when Paul writes his letter to the church in Rome, Paul is talking about how people, outsiders, Gentiles, are made right, are made accepted by God. And he says that happens, the only way that happens is people saying yes to Jesus. Faith. The only way that happens is at 12, I was this, I went to that summer camp, I said this moment, I said, "Yes, I believe in Jesus and I receive what you've done for me." And at that moment, everything has changed. Paul says, that's what we're talking about. Paul's looking at this moment, how people outside from God get to become, so to speak, insiders with God. Paul's looking at this moment here. That's not what James is talking about in his letter. James is kind of looking at, so to speak, the end of the story. He's kind of like, if we could go to the end of Dominic's life, which hopefully is way over there, but we'll just, for the sake of me not walking across the stage, we'll just say it's here. And he says, if we could go back or to the end of Dominic's life and kind of look back towards that age 13, he says, if we kind of looked at how he lived, would that sync up with the decision that happened over here? That's what James is talking about. James is looking at it from this angle. If we could look back on it, does how he's living sync up? It doesn't mean that he lived perfectly. It doesn't mean that he was confined to a certain context. It doesn't mean that he had to make this incredible sacrifice. It just means that he lived in ways that lined up with that what happened back there at 13. So James, when he talks about justification, he's looking at it this way. And Paul's looking at it from this way. So they're looking at the same thing, just from different sides. The other thing that's important for you to know as you think through this and look through these passages together is that Paul and James have a different idea. They use the word works differently. For Paul, when he talks about being made right with God, and he kind of puts aside the idea of works, he's always talking about works of the law. And particularly for people in Paul's day, when Paul came around and said what he said, he says, anyone can join the family of God by saying yes to Jesus. People had huge problems with that. And part of the reason was, is that as Jewish communities, they said, hang on, we had to do a lot as part of our Jewish background, including getting circumcised. And so now there's all these people coming in. You say they can just join this deal without going through all of those ritual laws? And Paul says, yeah, no, they don't have to go through that. And then particularly, they don't have to go through circumcision in order to be made right with God, to which we look back and say, bless you, Paul, for your ministry and your labor of love 2,000 years ago. So when Paul's talking about works, only two of us laughed at that. I guess everyone else was fine with circumcision. That's okay. It's a conversation for another time. But Paul, when he talks about works, he's saying, hey, you don't have to do all these ritual things, including circumcision, in order to get this, in order to get made right with God. You just have to say yes to Jesus and accept the gift of faith. That's how Paul's using this idea of works. That's not how James is using the idea of works. He's saying works are these acts of love, these acts of charity, these things that we're that God's given us to do, these moments where you see someone in need and you just move toward them and help them. And you don't know why. Well, you do know why. You feel like the Spirit is stirring you to do that. That's what James is talking about. He's saying those things, that's connected to this decision I made over here. Do you see how maybe they're a little bit more complementary than people may tend to take this to mean? Both of them will say, you get made right with God. I am made right with God. You have a choice to be made right with God when you say yes to Jesus. And they would both say, including Paul would say this, well, that now means something how you live the rest of your life. To join the kingdom of God, not only in this moment, but every day after. You can see it in the end of that phrase there on the screen where James says, by faith alone. In other words, for James, there's no idea, there's like no mental construct that faith would ever just be this mental idea. Something has now changed in a person's life when they say yes to Jesus. James is saying, hang on, if there's been a separation for you between what you believe and what you do, start to bring that, reduce that gap. That's not the way it should be. Faith, this decision to say yes to Jesus, means that we're starting to say yes to Jesus at every moment along the way. You can't claim to forgive someone, for example, and not forgive them. You can't claim to stand up for justice and not support a victim. You can't claim to comfort people, to start to say, you know what, there's pain in the world, and that pain, it matters because people matter to God, and then stand back and not comfort. Whatever it is, you and I are faced with these moments every day where we see these things and we're like, I know there's something good about this, but I'm not sure if I want to step in. And James is saying, yes, yes, step in, because that is faith. That though you know may not know what that step may bring, he says that action is faith. Okay, let me give you an example as we start to land the plane here. 11 and a half years ago, I got married to Hillary. Thank you. Hold your applause. And 11 and a half years ago, I stood there like most people, and I said a vow to Hillary. If you're married or if you've been to a wedding, you've seen this. People write, they either write a vow or they say this vow, and like, you know, it's so muffled through tears. You can't hear what they're saying, and they're holding this shaky piece of paper and what all the other stuff that comes with that vow. Here's the thing about vows, and I think this will maybe help us, maybe help you today. Here's the thing about the vow, the purpose of the vow. What is the purpose of the vow? The purpose of the vow is that you do it. The purpose of the vow wasn't to like have this nice moment in the wedding ceremony where all of us are wiping away tears, and it was so cute because he doesn't usually talk in public, and now he talked and all this. That's not the purpose of the vow. The purpose of the vow was what happens next. It's not what happened right there in that wedding day, because yes, everyone on their wedding day is like, I will do everything. Yes, we're going to have the perfect marriage. No, the purpose of the vow is what happens next. Now you can say, well, what's the point? We shouldn't even vow. We should just see how life goes. That's one option. I don't think that's very good. I think there's something about saying, I'm into this. I commit to this. This is what I want to be about. That's what we're talking about. And then every day after comes the vow. 6 months later, and a year later, and 5 years later, and 12 years later, and every other day after comes the vow. That's what James is talking about here. He's not saying, like, well, just forget the vow. Don't even worry about getting married. Just do whatever. He's saying that matters, but it only matters is if you do it after. Otherwise, it was just a nice moment and you captured on video. James is saying what you believe, what you do, are deeply He's calling his community to act in new ways in the world that would exemplify the very thing that they believe. Jesus said similar things throughout his teaching, and as I think about and we think about communion that we took earlier, I think about John, the Gospel of John, in John chapter 15. Jesus says kind of this James teaching in his own way. He says, if you remain in me, and my words remain in you. Ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. For this is my Father's glory. Listen to this, that you bear much fruit, showing yourself to be my disciples. And you go, hold on, Jesus, it's not about works. It's not about what we do. And Jesus is saying, no, hold on. His desire is that you remain, that you abide, that you rest, that you are in receiving communion with Jesus. And it's both and for Jesus. And here's the glory of God. Here's where God gets put on display, is where you start to live that out. The deep passion and heart desire of Jesus for you is that you would abide and rest and receive and be in relationship with him. And see how that starts to transform the very places you work and live. These two things are deeply, deeply connected. Who God is drives how you and I act in the world. At CPC, we have a number of examples. A number of you are involved in ways where we start to see the beauty of faith. Ways that we get excited as a community. There's a way that we've talked about a bunch this year, and it's worth talking about again with our veterans ministry. A number of you are involved with our veterans ministry. And recently, one of the people on the team that was involved is John Heelan. Some of you, many of you probably know him. And he was able to be interviewed for this program that came a few weeks ago and got an award, and really kind of in my mind, that's representative of that team of people that has worked together to serve the veterans ministry. And so I want to show a little bit of that video, or show that video now, as this picture of one example of ways that faith is acting out in our world and bringing change to the very place that we live. Let's take a look.
For several years at Central Peninsula Church, we have had a group of men who have been very passionate about helping veterans in our community, particularly homeless veterans. One of the most active members of this ministry and of our church is a man named John Heelan. John himself had experienced many challenges, and he came here as a man who was beginning to sort of put the pieces back together. And honestly, God really used that to give him a passion to help others as well.
I started out addicted to drugs and alcohol at 12 years of age. And pretty much most of my life I was a very broken man between, you know, addiction to cocaine and alcohol, totally out of control, selfish, self-centered, self-seeking individual, and didn't care anybody but myself. I could not stay sober for 25 years in recovery, you know, and I was kind of the poster child of relapse. One Sunday, I walked in this church, and that day my life changed. Something happened to me, and it was like, the whole ceiling came off the church. And I knew something happened that day. So I've been sober ever since. A little over 2 years ago, it was on Veterans Day. I was here at church. And they were asking people in the church to help with their veterans ministry. They were just starting it, and they wanted to house homeless veterans.
I think one of the main things that caught John's eye on the veterans ministry is the fact that he himself vocationally is a mover. He owns his own business. He moves high-end clients with high-end furniture from place to place. Oftentimes they would want to get rid of furniture. And John realized that, hey, we could take that furniture and we could bless these veterans with something that they really need.
People have been so generous. Most of the time, if I can, whatever furniture they give me, I text them a picture of the veteran with the furniture in their apartment, and it goes a long ways. I feel like the richest man on the planet. There's no amount of money, there's nothing that could touch the way I feel now. You know, and my whole life, I was a very empty person inside. And today I feel full.
I'm so proud of John Helan, and I know the rest of the people of Central Peninsula Church are very proud of him to receive this award as the Patriot of the Year. I can honestly say that John is extremely well-deserving of this award.
I wouldn't change anything that's ever happened to me in my life to be where I am today and understand people in their hearts and the struggles inside them and the demons. I understand that. It's given me a compassion and empathy for people. It's all part of this, my journey. You know, I feel like my whole life was my training ground for today. You know, I figure I'm in the fourth quarter of life and I want to finish strong. You know, I really want to finish strong. And this is what I want to do.
That's one example. And again, as we said earlier, yeah. Some of you are involved in that ministry, and other, and the rest of us, you may kind of go, oh, well, that's amazing. I want to support that. I'm behind that. I'm praying for that. I'm giving to that. But I that's not me. Like, that's not maybe what God's called me to, or that's not what I have time or space to do. Whatever the thing is, the point isn't that say, like, everyone should now go do that thing. The point is, that's one example of someone who said, I've got this experience and this opportunity. Maybe God's opening this door. And so though that may not be your thing, you are called to something. Your calling is somehow, in some way, to listen to the voice of God in your space, in your home, in your work, in the things that God has given to you, because he's given you things and people and opportunity and space for a purpose. So as we close, I want to give you three areas. I want you later this week, tomorrow, something with your spouse, with your kids, whatever, to be thinking through. Maybe ask yourself in these spaces, these experiences where God may be calling something new for you. I want you to think about your past. I want you to think about your present. And I want you to think about your future. Your past, your present, your future. How is what you believe about God calling you to act in ways in each of those areas? So, for example, your past. Here's a way. Maybe there are things about your past that you're holding on to. Maybe there are things about your past, things you don't need to be gripping onto that you've got a tight grip upon. Maybe you've been holding on to it because you don't trust God to do anything with it. Maybe faith for you will be starting to act and release that to him. Maybe think about your present. Maybe there are things right now that God has put on your heart that though maybe it's not moving, maybe there's a burden. You're like, I've got a similar burden. There's a similar weight on me. The prophets, the Old Testament prophets used to talk about having a burden, which I love that idea. What is the burden on your heart? What is the thing on your mind, on your like inner being that like this is the thing that God has for me? Like, here's the thing where maybe you just something you think about often, something that comes to mind. Maybe for you this week, faith means I need to step forward into that. Maybe you look at your future. Maybe your future, like all of our futures, unknown to us. But maybe there are things holding you back from decisions you need to make. You know God's put it on your heart to make that decision. And maybe faith for you is stepping forward and making that decision. And you say, all of those, past, present, future, those are scary things. No, those are opportunities of faith. That's where you step off this line and start to walk in this direction. Because you go with the foundation of the promise of God that you're accepted in the person of Jesus. We're going to close this morning as a benediction with a song. And my hope is that you would sing this song. You would sing it for yourself. You would sing it for people that you love. You would sing it together as the church. It's a declaration that we believe in the grace and the favor of God, that God has done something for you in the person of Jesus. And God is calling you into something right where you are. There'll be people here and in the back who would love to pray with you if you want to pray with someone before you leave. But before we sing that song together as a church, I want to pray for us. Let me pray for us as we go. God, thank you for the incredible gift of faith. It truly is a gift that you move towards us in the person of Jesus. And in that gift of faith is this call to act, this call to live out the very thing that we believe about you. God, may we be people who have new insight, that we trust you in new ways, that we would live in new ways that start to shape our marriages and our parenting and our work and our relationships with one another in ways that they haven't been shaped before. Would we not separate what we believe, what's going on internally, with what we're doing in this world? May I not do that. May we be a community of faith that if we could put ourselves as the audience of James this morning, that we would go, yes, James, that's what we want to be about. We want to move out from this acceptance that has happened through the person of Jesus. May that be our declaration. Holy Spirit, would you stir that in us as we say in this benediction and declare about the good grace that's available to us and available to the people that we live and love near us. It's in his name we pray.